What is up, everybody? Athlete on Fire here. Scott Jones, your host. This one is brought to you guys by Spartan Media Fest and ATP Science. They brought us out to grab all this media, so we got to give them a little shout out. Would not feel right to not do that. So you guys are about to listen to an interview I had with Kelly Starrett and his wife, Juliette Starrett. And we talk about movements and simplicity and how runners should think about movement and things they can do that will make things better for them. Just some really, really basic things you can take away, and they give you some ideas of where to start. And we talk about culture and raising kids in this climate, just a lot of cool stuff. Kelly is the founder of San Francisco CrossFit. It's one of the first 50 CrossFit boxes in the nation. They do a lot of good work. I've interviewed Max Conserva, who heads up their adaptive athlete programming over there, which is really interesting. And Julia is his wife. They have a podcast called The Ready State. We get into all that stuff. I think you guys will really like it. It was fast-paced. We didn't have a lot of time. We're in a loud, busy, happening room here in Tahoe, Squaw Valley, and really, really enjoyed the stuff they had to say. I did not tell Kelly this, but I've only probably bought 5 to 10 books since my grad school days, and his book, The Supple Leopard, is one of the few that I have bought as a resource, as a coach and trainer. So it was really, really special to be able to talk to these guys and just have a conversation like we just sat down in the coffee shop. So hope you guys enjoy. I think you'll all learn something from this. And if you're a runner, you need to listen up. This is huge for you. Let's just get into it. Let's just pretend like we just met at a coffee shop and I never had a clue who you guys were.
We practically did.
We basically did.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the coffee bar is now here. No shade on Starbucks. Starbucks has saved my life many times, but coffee bar is legit.
It's legit.
Yeah.
It is legit.
Yeah, we just ate like a sausage breakfast bowl.
You guys good to go?
We are good to go.
Energized?
We are energized.
So where'd you guys stay last night?
We actually own a house up here in Tahoe and Truckee.
Yeah.
We live just about 3.5 hours away near San Francisco, so we come up here a ton and ski in the winter and mountain bike in the summer.
It's really a funny intersection because we had lives as professional river guides.
Yeah.
And a lot of our professional river guide friends live here. And then we have sort of our other San Francisco professional friends who all live here. And
yeah.
Then we have another set of like CrossFit friends up here.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of the Venn diagram of of our lives. It works up. It works well.
Yeah, like, what do we want to do up here this weekend? Let's go.
Well, people forget that the summer and the fall here is about having a big set of lungs and exploring.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, as we get older, I think unequivocally, we appreciate that we're probably strong enough and we're definitely skilled enough, but where you can never have enough money in the bank is the aerobic bank. You cannot be aerobic enough to have adventures. And honestly, at some point you're like, well, how gnarled do I want to get?
Yeah.
And it's less, right? Because I'm turning 46 tomorrow. If I injure myself, my wife's going to kill me.
Yes.
But, 3-hour mountain bike rides, big hikes. I mean, this is the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bad for business. Being hurt.
Less good.
Yeah, it's less good.
And by business, you mean being killed by your wife.
Yeah, that's definitely business.
That's bad business.
Okay, so we'll talk about all the stuff that we do professionally. But, you know, every time I get into these things, the one thing I always ask myself is, you guys have been asked a million different questions in interviews, I'm sure, and probably 800,000 of them are pretty similar. But the one thing that's never happened, we've never had a conversation. So if we have something unique and, like, we can connect, like, on a personal level, that's usually my goal in these things.
Awesome.
It's way better.
It is way better. And plus, when I first started podcasting, so my background's in exercise science. That's what my master's is in. I've been coaching in some way, shape, or form for my whole career. And this was just such a fun way to decide how I thought about things. Like, you have to verbalize these things, and it's not as easy when you're just working with athletes all day long or whatever. So it's kind of interesting to see how you think about things, you know?
Yeah, you know, we really relate to that, because that's really why we started a podcast, too, is, you know, we weren't trying to make money off of it or try to make it a thing. Like, we were having interesting conversations with people, and we figured other people might want to be part of some of those interesting conversations. And so, you know, that's been our goal with our podcast. It's just fun to talk to people.
Yeah.
And the other thing, I think, in this sort of wild west of, we'll put quotation marks, human performance, high performance.
Yeah.
So much of the magic happens in the interrelationships, the interpersonal conversations, the sharing, and all of the best coaches, physios, high performance people I know are 100% transparent and will show you all their work.
Yeah.
And so these conversations really do help to raise the bar on everyone.
Yeah.
So this kind of relationship is the way forward. And I think sometimes if you're at home and you're just a user, and I'm putting quotation marks, just a user, because no one, everyone's part of this grand experiment that we have, right?
Right.
For sure.
But, you know, it's difficult to appreciate the number of conversations and the power of the loose network connections that happens between coaches trying to solve the same sets of problems.
Yeah.
How do we run and be pain free? How do I run and still like come back and have energy to be a good family man?
Yeah, we'll talk about running for sure. So when I got started, the initial podcast, which we're recording today, is Athlete on Fire. And it was so general. Like, I'm putting my energy into this thing, and even though the goal wasn't to make money, I still had to have a goal for, you know, and it was just so general. I was like, all right, I gotta tighten this up a little bit. So I'd been working with a handful, so many ultra runners and runners in Colorado. I just had so many coming through the doors.
So many sick runners.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, and that's
exceptional.
And passionate, obsessive, had their heart in the right place, but just pushing, you know. And I really wanted to find a way to take what people saw on social media, the Killians and the Ian Sharmans and, you know, a lot of the people that are here this weekend, and see that performance and realize, like, it's not just by going out there and pounding and getting 100-mile weeks in. So set up this concept to take people who wanted to do these big things, who are inspired to do these big things, and give them as many resources as possible. So what we do is we take people who are in the early stages of training for these longer efforts, and I open source all of my coaching calls. It's part of this whole podcast that I kind of niche down on. And like you said, like, I can go sit down with other coaches, and if they want to listen to what I'm doing, they can. I don't care. I'm pretty confident in the information as a whole. Definitely skewed towards a lot more strength. Like 90, I don't know, I'm putting a crazy weird percentage on this, but 95% of the coaches that I have worked with and collaborated with in the ultra world are prescribed zero strength, like zero. And these are recreational athletes. Like, we're talking about durability and right. being able to do this
right.
for your
longevity
whole life, not
and, yeah,
winning
right.
races, you
right.
know?
Yeah, it's complicated. You know, like, Hunter McIntyre is here, one of our good friends. Is honestly one of the best athletes I know, right? And that guy can full snatch and, you know, power clean and deadlift and do any of the sort of classic athletic traits, which I think rightfully so in our endurance community have gotten a bad rap. And I'll say yes and no. Like, can our athletes be more explosive and more durable? Yes. What's the way to do that? More running? More cycling? Probably not. Like, there are other ways.
Yeah.
But conversely, strength conditioning really got sort of waylaid into powerlifting and classic strength training bodybuilding. And that doesn't necessarily translate to, hey, do I want to be heavier as a runner? Probably not.
Right.
Could I be stronger in the same weight? Yes, I can. That's
Could
really
I
strange.
Could I be more explosive?
Yeah. More explosive and more durable
yeah.
and more efficient. So I think one of the revolutions that's happened is, and I really do appreciate that, at some point, the conversation became about being a cross-trained athlete. But the problem with that is you need to go run. And if you are, or you need to go cycle or swim or bike
right.
or paddle, whatever you need to do. And the question then is, how do I start to think about my strength conditioning training, my durability training, really as sports-specific training, which means it has one outcome, which is to make me a better runner, to make me a better cyclist, to make me better. Right? So if I'm not seeing changes in my mechanics, soreness, right, durability, less injury, and I'm not getting faster, is that really a good use of my time? And so I think what happens, we're like, oh, by the way, you're a runner, we know what it's going to take. And it's definitely less junk miles today than it ever has been before.
Yeah,
people
absolutely.
Are doing dense training.
Yeah.
But then we're like, oh, by the way, you're going to need to go spend another 4 hours in the gym. And people are like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have energy for that. I can't eat for that. I don't have
right.
the training for that. Like,
yeah.
That's crazy. So when we start looking at strength conditioning as coordination, as efficiency, as restoration of position and mechanics, because, you know, yes, we love cycling, comma, if you spend a bunch of time on a bike, you're going to be a broken cyclist. You're
yeah.
going to look like a cyclist, a demi-human. And,
yeah.
and again, that's one of our sports. Like, we love this.
Yeah.
So how do I then reimagine strength and conditioning so that I become a better cyclist and that I still have access to my physiology and all that stuff?
Yeah.
And that really is a great question.
Yeah,
and I would add that one of the things I relate to what you're talking about in your approach is that even at our CrossFit gym, you know, we've sort of evolved over the years to have our whole approach, like, we call it CrossFit for life.
Yeah.
You know, we have totally de-emphasized, like, competitive CrossFit and writing up times on the board. And, you know, our whole approach is like we're trying to create durable, lifelong athletes who can either CrossFit if that's their main sport, or if they're just using CrossFit as cross training for cycling or whatever other thing they're doing, that they can go do all those things, but that they can go do all those things for their whole life, that they're not going to blow their, you know, blow themselves out by the time they're 40 and then not be able to do anything.
You know, and one of the things that's difficult to understand, I think, is when you are an endurance athlete, you're probably not getting a lot of footage of yourself, a lot of feedback. Some people are getting that coaching.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to see compensation and incomplete mechanics. It's difficult to see that because the body is designed to run, particularly. That's what we're designed to do, run and walk. It's the core skill, that one of the things that makes us human, getting up and off the ground, carrying something back to the tribe, and running, maybe throwing. But the bottom line is sometimes it's difficult to understand what's going on. And it's really difficult to change your mechanics. If you run a parallel diagnostic program all the time, and that's called a movement practice, and that can be Pilates or yoga or CrossFit or kettlebells, then suddenly you can see all the problems. What do you mean I can't squat, hip crease below the knee, and keep my heels on the ground? Well, that should be a red flag, because at some point I'm going to be going up and down hills, right? Or compensating. So if we can more closely conjoin the diagnostic tool with the stimulus for restoration adaptation, then it makes a lot more sense for people. And, you know, how strong you need to be a runner. Well, I have children, and I have little kids who can run and sprint.
Yeah.
They're not very strong. Yeah. So maybe I need to be strong enough to get better. And I think people get into the weeds on, well...
Don't you think as a professional, the issue is doing that at scale? I mean, being able to get the diagnostics from clients that are reaching out to you from all over the world. I mean, that... For someone like, I got my start working with a lot of guys training for the combine back east, and so you're working with people who already have great form, decent power. Of course, there's imbalances in these guys, but my job is to just get after it with them, you know. And now I have people calling from wherever to get better. So you're doing programming, you're doing calls, you're prescribing, and every once in a while they're disciplined enough to go show you them running on a track or something, you know, something as simple as that, or doing some basic movements. But for me to do that at scale, I mean, the technology's coming along for sure. But as a coach, to do it at scale is tricky, I think.
We have to raise the bar on what we expect our athletes to be able to understand about themselves, and that means we have to start earlier.
Right.
And here's an example. At the gym recently, this last week, we had an incredible athlete. He's a professional Gaelic football player. And he'd been tracking down some problems, couldn't get ahead of it, finally decided to come do a camp, right? And guess what? He was a terrible mover. He didn't know how to move. He moved terribly.
What does that mean to you, for people listening?
Just, basics and foundations of movement, movement theory, foot pressures all over the place in the squat, can't breathe, doesn't know how to stiffen, missing huge swaths of range of motion. And he was totally oblivious to it. I don't know what the problem is. We're like, dude, we just made a problem list in 10 minutes, and there's 20 things on this problem list.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
So I think what's great is that we definitely democratized the sense that you can have access to the best training plans and programs on the planet. But the relationship between coach and athlete is a sacred one, and one that will always exist, because, you know, one of the things that we're doing in this conversation is we're stripping out the fact that Juliet and I have two kids and two businesses and friends and things we like to do.
Yeah.
We can't be robot trainer.
Right.
So what we want to do is make sure that, you know, we can work really hard, but if we're trashed, sleep deprived, stressed, you can't tell that in a online relationship. And a coach can see your eyes and be like, all right, I know what we're doing today, and it's not what I had planned.
Yep.
And I think that's the issue.
It's huge.
Well, I was going to add, too, that I think when you're talking about this scale issue, one of the challenges we have is getting people to care about their mechanics before they get injured.
Right.
People really start to care once they get injured, and then they start to, you know, like this Gaelic football player, if he'd come to us because he had a torn ACL, people in that state seem to be more open to saying, okay, there must be some reason why I tore my ACL, and maybe it's my mechanics, and okay, I'm now 40 and I'm going to actually start to care about my mechanics, and or work with a coach who cares about my mechanics. But, you know, it is really hard to get people to care about it and prioritize it in their training, and this is, in our experience, across all sports, all disciplines. And I think that's how you scale it. I think when you get the athletes to actually care about it and then seek out coaches who care and can actually coach them on their mechanics, then it's scalable. But until people wait until they get injured, you know, it's hard to scale this.
Well, and let me just piggyback on that. You know, the giving someone a rationale for why they should do something about something that may or may not happen in the future. Because I know these genetic monsters who have them, like they have titanium for joints and they have steel cables for ligaments, and they never get injured.
Yeah.
And they can do anything they want, eat little chocolate donuts, smoke a cigarette, go drinking, they can crush everyone and never get injured.
Yet.
But they're the exception, not the rule.
Right. And I think the key, though, is it's difficult for us to understand that our sleep, stress, nutrition, warm-up, cool-down, all the adaptation errors around best practice all matter. But it may not matter today. It may only matter 10 years from now or 5 years from now.
Right.
Or when I finally sensitize my tissues or finally can't buffer that anymore. Something happens. I jumped on a red eye, then went for a run, then my knee started hurting, and I never stopped. But if we focus on performance, running faster, being more efficient, breathing more efficiently when we're running, right? Making it about, hey, this is the way that we think you're going to run and be the most durable. And by the way, you'll probably get injury prevention in the mix.
Right.
Then that's really aspirational. And that's really what we're trying to do. We don't say, like, for example, we really don't say good mechanics, bad mechanics. We're like, you just have incomplete mechanics. You're far away from what your body should be able to do.
Okay. Yeah, that makes
and
sense.
It doesn't mean you can't run today or squat today. It doesn't mean you can't be fast. You may even be world champion.
Yeah.
This still means you're not accessing your physiology.
Yeah.
But I still say this, what we're talking about, exemplifies our relationship, and that Kelly's always trying to be the positive and I'm like the negative person. But people don't care enough. They don't care. I mean, there's so many runners we have who come in and they literally cannot squat down at all without their heels coming 6 inches off the ground.
And they wonder why they're heel striking
and or they're not performing at their, you know. So it is really hard. It is a challenge for us in our business, and I think for any coaches, to really like make people care about having good mechanics and why that is. Forget about the injury prevention piece. That's going to actually make them better at whatever sport it is they're trying to do.
Well, in the 80s and 90s, we definitely talked about just do it. The most important thing was to load. Get out there.
Yeah.
Right? And that's true. We have to begin, and we have a moment to get better. And I think that's what, you know, we don't have to be perfect. In fact, if I describe you, do you have perfect running technique?
No.
Are you always working on it?
Probably not.
for a lot of our athletes, they're always...
It's top of mind. You know, it's definitely top of mind.
That's what I mean, though. This is an open game. You'll never be perfect because your body changes, you age, the demands of your life get in the way. And so if we play this as a game that, like, growth mindset, and we learn to value it earlier in our careers, as children, right? Someone says, hey, this is really important. And by the way, you don't have to have it perfect, but we're going to be better tomorrow. Then that becomes part of the conversation. To date, what we valued is, did I go faster, yes or no? And that's the only thing we care about, right?
Well, and if I could talk about runners for a second, like, what would be great is if we could get to a point where, like, if a runner has knee pain, they don't go out and buy themselves a pair of $150 Hoka shoes that look like clown shoes as their remedy, which is what most runners do. They're like, oh, my knee hurts, oh, my ankle hurts, I must need a super squishy shoe to buffer that, as opposed to, hey, my knee and my ankle are hurting while I'm running. Maybe I should work with a coach who understands mechanics, and maybe I should improve my mechanics, and then I don't have to wear some ridiculous running shoe in order to be able to buffer my poor mechanics.
And let me just say that a shoe is just a tool.
Right.
It's not a solution.
Right.
So what's the tool that allows you to have best access? And if you're changing your tool as a temporary solution to a problem, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's not how we've made it a commodity. We've made it commercialized.
Right. People are like, knee hurts, buy a fancy shoe, right? As opposed to knee hurts.
So are you telling me that my Hokas that were on clearance at REI 3 days ago? You know
what?
I wear these for this kind of stuff, though.
Are you guys running right now in those things? Because it's weird that you're wearing a running shoe and you're not running.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
And but it's a way of signaling your tribe. Look, and you know, you think they look good with jeans. And, you know, so I think what's interesting is underneath all this, we're having a more nuanced conversation around the demands and the shifts in people's environments. Yeah. We're sitting a lot more. We're not walking enough.
Right.
We don't sit on the ground. You know, how is our sleep? You know, we're bringing these devices in. You know, we see people, they're like, I'm eating so clean. We're like, oh, really? What does that mean to you? And they're like, I had this broccoli, I had this white rice, and this sashimi chicken breast. And we're like, oh, you're eating like a dog. Like, there's no essential fats, right? You don't have any collagen or connective tissue. And so people are perfect products of the experience in the system. So we really start with the assumption that you're just a product of your environment. And if you don't know better, it's not your fault. It's when you have the consciousness that you begin to, you know, make progress, because it's a choice. And what we're trying to really advocate for is to give you more choice.
Yeah.
Because if you have to stop running when you're 40, that's a red flag for us that we got it really wrong.
Right.
Because this is something you should be able to do forever.
So I have a question. I was talking to one of my buddies who I went to grad school with, very similar careers, like both training athletes forever and both very entrepreneurial. So we have all these other projects as well. And he's working with a tennis academy back in South Carolina with some pretty good younger tennis players. And he's just in his evolution as a coach and trainer. Has noticed like just the need for simplicity, especially with young athletes. And you know, like even when we're just sitting here, like somebody off the street came in that doesn't talk about this stuff every day was listening to us, they might go cross-eyed. I don't know. Maybe this is common sense. But when you think about simplicity for your athletes, there's two things. For me, it's I have young kids. I have a 6 and 8 year old. And you know, when I was growing up, we did everything. Everything was general, and then we got specific when we got to late high school, college. Now it's just specificity all day long. And I've been training athletes way more general, just total overall fitness, strength, like moving to every plane, everything like that. So when we're talking to adults who already have their bad habits and who are getting on the internet and trying to comprehend where they should start, and we've just probably thrown out 20 concepts in a 20-minute talk. Where do they start? Like, what is the simplest way to get moving healthy and pain-free for people listening, you know?
Simple. You go to thereadystate.com. No.
Yes. Is that the rebrand?
Yes. That's our new name.
So, you know, we used to fly out when Virgin America was still going around. On the screen, on the back of the seat, it said, touch anywhere to begin. And that really is a great place. So when we start, for example, we'll start with saying, hey, look, you know that you use your legs as an athlete. People are like, yes. I'm like, okay, you need to know the names of the muscles or the groups or what the function is. Get a ball, get a roller. If you lay on that ball or roller on any one of the muscle groups you perceive to be tight or hurt or something that you may use, and it hurts when you lay on it, you found the place to begin. Because normal tissues should be painless to compression.
Right.
So if you push on something and it hurts, what you see is you have an overstiffened system. So, great, we can start there. So what we really advocate for is 10 or 15 minutes a day. Get 10 minutes a day noodling on a conversation. You don't have to speak fluent Spanish,
right,
or high-level calculus. We're going to teach you arithmetic, and we have a moment, and you'll get better just by knowing arithmetic. Basic skills. So if you can, you know, our basic rules are, hey, tissue should be painless to compression. So you step on a ball, you freak out and black out, that's a problem. Your tissue shouldn't feel like beef jerky.
Right.
You should feel like layers of warm silk sliding over steel springs. Right? And if you can't take a full breath, it's not normal. So protect yourself. Work at a level where you can take a full breath in and a full breath out. So if you get on your foam roller on your IT band, which is a bad idea by the way, and you are holding your breath, you're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You're just basically ripping out your fingernails.
So for the millions of runners who are rolling the living hell out of their IT band right now as they listen, tell them why, though.
Well, the IT band doesn't mobilize. It's like, I'm going to mobilize this piece of steel.
Right.
Right. But your quadriceps, your leg muscles on the front of your thigh, attach on the IT band. Let's work on those. Let's feed slack to the system.
Yeah.
So anywhere you should be able to contract really hard and relax instantaneously. And if you can't do that, you can't take a foam roller to the full pressure. Because by the way, rolling on a foam roller is a really low bar. Like, that's not even aggressive or specific.
Yeah.
That's how low the bar is and how jacked up people are.
Yeah.
Right? And how sensitized their tissues are. So make sure that wherever you are, hamstrings, TFL, glutes, hips, it doesn't matter. you know, yoga is fantastic.
Wait,
yoga.
My TFL. Okay,
that's right.
Freaking tight. Okay.
Yoga is fantastic. But yoga is a movement practice. We're using yoga to like magically stretch us. Yoga is a way of moving in a complete way. It's not about restoration or mobilizing your stiff calves, which you put, you know, how many steps in 400 meters? A lot, right? Magnify that. And then the fact that you didn't warm up, you didn't cool down, you sat in the car, sat at the table, like layer that on for decades and decades.
I got two things I have to interrupt you. So just to answer your original question, I mean, I would tell people to start with, they need a coach. I mean, I realize all the serious ultra runners have a coach already, but also have a coach that cares about mechanics and understands mechanics. I think that would be key. But then I think I'm punting it back to Kelly, because I think one of the things that's lost in this sort of like, how do I take care of my body debate is I actually don't think people understand what mobility is and why it's different from stretching and why it's better and more effective than stretching. And I can get up to that point, but then I would punt it back to Kelly to explain what is mobility, because I think athletes really need to understand the difference between stretching and mobility. And also I would include like sort of low quality foam rolling in front of the TV as like kind of low quality mobility work.
Right.
So I don't know.
It's
a way of starting. Yeah. It's a good starting place. It's better than not doing anything. But I also think like one step above that is understanding what mobility is, why it's different from stretching, and why athletes want to be mobilizing as part of their practice. But I'm going to let Kelly explain what mobility is
and
why they should care.
Yeah.
So when we, you know, mobility became a surrogate for the word stretching, right?
Yeah.
And when we started our project, you know, in 2008, we were explicitly using the word mobility because no one used it. It wasn't out there. It was used to describe cell phones and wheelchairs, right?
Yeah, I don't think... I'm just trying to think of my own education. I don't remember in 03, 04. Yeah.
You heard maybe some PNF?
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
And so the idea here is, one is, do you have full access to your positions as a human being? If you were unconscious and I was moving your shoulder through a range of motion, that's just like you're a piece of meat. Can you move there? Okay? That's like, do you have the access? Is that a joint capsule problem? Are your musculatures just stiff? Is it just a sliding surface sort of fascial problem? And a lot of the common overuse sort of nagging problems that we see are just simple myofascial problems. Just the tension, things are overstiff, not getting a lot of blood flow, don't function great, right? They're expressions of us just treating ourselves like rented mules, right? And because we can do it. But then that's only half the equation. The second half of the equation is having the technique to express that range of motion. Your brain is wired for movement, period.
Yeah.
So if you just pull on something, stretching, classic stretching, the reason a lot of people don't stretch is that they didn't find it worked.
Right.
So unequivocally now, the number of places we go, the number of athletes we get to work with is quite insane.
Yeah.
Athletes universally always do what works and makes them better athletes.
Yeah.
If I make it so your knee doesn't hurt and you run faster, you will remember that lesson, and I don't ever have to remind you again. If I tell you to do something that you feel is a waste of time, but you do it, and then it doesn't make you better or change your pain, you'll stop doing it.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with stretching. People were like, this is lame, because it actually doesn't make me feel better, and it's not making me, and it doesn't have a goal.
Yeah.
Right. So while, making me a faster
point.
Runner or whatever.
Our goal is to have full hip flexion. Right? And if I'm an elite athlete, it's to have enough hip flexion that's bringing my knee to my chest so that I don't compensate. I don't develop a pattern of a workaround.
Right.
But for the rest of us who are just mortals, we need more of everything. And that means, what is it my body should be able to do? And do I have the skill to do it? And that's why a movement practice, running in parallel, whether you're swinging kettlebells, whether you're going to yoga, you're going to Pilates, those are movement practices. Even if you just started and went to the easiest CrossFit classes you could get your hands on, you're going to do better. So front squatting, deadlifting, push-ups, pressing, these are the elements of a movement practice. And you may be missing some ranges there, but again, it's not even necessarily about being stronger. It's about practicing the efficiency of being able to express what my body should be able to do. So that's mobility.
Yeah.
So ultimately, Juliet's right. If you play press and guess, which is the entree in, right? I roll on a ball, it feels better, but I didn't change anything.
Right.
And more importantly, I didn't get to the bottom of why I potentially had this stiffness or tightness, which may have been protecting me because I was moving like a jerk for 50 miles.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, what we know is that simultaneously, as a coaching community, we have to do a better job of making it simple and easy to sort of integrate into your life. Because if you come on to camp with us for a week, you're going to eat right, you're going to sleep right, you're going to warm up and cool down, you're going to swim in ice and sauna, and you're going to feel great, and then you're going to go back to your house and be like, whoa, I have 45 minutes to run. When do I do the rest of it, right? Yeah. 2 a.m? So we need to do a better job of making it easier to integrate into working people's lives, actual people's lives. Yeah. You know,
and this is going to be a theme forever, but the all or none principle of training, like busy people feel they need that 60, 70, 80 minute block to get a real effort in. And half the time when they can't get that,
it's just nothing, come hang out with us. We can do 1K repeats. I guarantee you have enough time. Like, that's brutal.
But I mean, we get it because we're also busy people. Like, we get it that if we, with our busy life and kids and family and all the other things we're doing, if we have an hour, we tend to bias like just destroying ourselves and crushing ourselves training, right? And it's always easy to be like, well, if I only have an hour, I'm going to scrap my mobility program because I only have an hour to train.
Right.
You know, we get that because we fall into that pattern as well, but also it will catch up with every single person.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe there's like the occasional mutant out there.
There are no mutants. Not like this.
But, you know, and that's why we've really tried to sort of, our whole mantra has always been 10 minutes a day, because I don't care how busy you are, you know, everybody's on social media. You could like cut 10 minutes of your scrolling through social media and instead like do a dedicated mobility practice. So I think, you know, people do have 10 minutes. I get it. People don't have an extra 2 hours, but they do have 10 minutes.
Where are you guys? And if you answer this wrong, you're liars. So we'll go with that.
Okay.
Where are you guys most,
where
are you guys most hypocritical in your coaching to your personal life?
Well, I'll tell you, what the real truth is that Juliet and I really like to see what we can go do. We do a pretty good job of what we preach because it's the minimum effective dose, and it's not a big deal to do it.
Right.
We developed the discipline and habit, and we realize now we're 46, and we cannot. I just got back from Moab, where I just did a 240-mile mountain bike ride, 6-day trip.
Nice.
And if
Kokopelli?
What's that?
Was that Kokopelli?
No, we did the Hayduke Trail.
Oh, nice.
And it was not easy. You know, the easy 50K day, you know, of mountain biking single track. And the key is if I don't wear compression socks afterwards and go for a walk when I'm done and eat like a human being and then open up my hips before I go to bed, I'm doomed.
Yeah.
So what I'll say is, Juliet and I, if we've done one thing well, it's that we often pull back now.
Yeah.
In a way that we didn't before. Like, I have this thing called desire to train, gameness. Like, do I want to train? And my desire to train bell is very loud.
Yeah.
And so I wake up in the morning and I start thinking about, what are we doing today? What are we doing? Are we going to walk? What are we happening?
Yeah.
And now when that bell is not there, I'm really trying to do a better job listening, and I go for a walk instead, or
that's
mobilize.
Great.
Or I'll keep the engine idling. I can go do some pull-ups. It doesn't mean that I need to, like, lay in a bed, but I'd say if we're hypocritical, we don't walk as much as we like to.
Right.
Well, and I would add, too, that...
I like cookies also.
Kelly Ditto. Loves cookies and ice cream. And I think I sometimes do a terrible job of, like, really turning off.
Right.
I'm kind of a go person, so...
Well, it's hard. You like know, you could literally work 24 hours a day.
Right, we could work 24 hours a day. So I mean, I
we
think
have kids, thank
you know,
yeah,
I think,
seriously.
I think it, you know, I were I to recommend sort of an ideal lifestyle to someone who I was working with, I would say like, man, you got to downregulate, got to have some kind of meditation practice or some way to really like turn off and chill. And I would say that I am personally terrible at that.
Yeah.
Like that is, I'm like, you know, I just am like a go all the time.
It's my wife too.
Yeah.
And what I would say to people around that is, see if you can create some behaviors where you don't have to make another choice.
Right.
You know, like, we're fortunate we have a sauna. And if you go in the sauna, you're broken. It will break you every single time.
Yeah.
Right? It's so hot that you're like, whoa. So we develop some practices that force us to shut down or force us to chill out. And that's one of them, for example.
That's great.
Getting ice and getting hot and getting cold will force you to relax and go to sleep. So, you know, to the extent that I think, you know, what we can't do, I honestly believe, is work harder. Some of our communities are, you know, Colorado, you live in Colorado.
Yeah.
if you go to the 7-Eleven in Aspen, the girl working the counter is the best skier you've never heard of.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The people on your trails, we just went for a little mountain bike ride yesterday with some friends who live up here, and they're just average people,
yeah.
Right? And what they can do going up and down the hill is remarkable.
Yeah.
And one of them happens to be a world champion. It's fine, right?
Yeah.
We get it. But for just a couple middle-aged women who do some bike riding, you can't believe how fit people are. So I don't think there are some people who need to work harder, but that's not typically who we're talking to.
Right.
People are working really hard. So doing our best to help them turn that off, chill out, and get out of that drive state is a way of actually eating the apple and absorbing the whole apple, not just taking a bite of the apple.
Yeah.
I would like to say in my defense that I think I probably will not do a great job down-regulating and really, like, chilling and relaxing until my kids go to college.
Yeah.
I just am sort of like, as a full-time working mom running two companies and raising two kids and trying to have a life,
yeah,
like, you know,
how old are your kids?
We have a 14-year-old, so a freshman in high school, and then a sixth grader, 11 and 14. So we're just a little bit ahead of you.
Yeah.
You know, so, but
it's tough.
Yeah.
One of the revolutions that I think is happening, and this is germane to this conversation, is that we're seeing that the gym, the home gym, is the next frontier.
Right.
And it's a normal expression of people getting online coaching and having all these experiences. And we think if you're a working athlete, you need a home gym. What does that mean? You need a place to roll out. You need a kettlebell and a pull-up bar.
Yeah.
And that's what you need. That's it.
Yep.
And if you went out and did a kettlebell flow, did some swings on the minute, 10 swings on the minute, did a few slow strict pull-ups. And
go into a set, because I think like people that are hearing this are like, okay, I need like actionable advice. Just like one workout for some people who are listening.
Well, here's a good example is just that if on days where you're feeling cooked or smoked, or, hey, I don't think I have enough training, but I know I need to do it.
Right.
If you just went out and swung the kettlebell, get a kettlebell, and just started with kettlebell swings, that would change your hip function dramatically and spinal function massively. Like, you will improve your wattage on the bike, you will run more effectively just through kettlebell swings. So start there.
Well, so I have a suggestion.
Yeah.
There's this CrossFit style of working out, which is called an EMOM.
Yeah.
Every minute on the minute.
Yep.
And that would be what I would recommend people do. I mean, if someone literally just has a kettlebell, I would say do 10 kettlebell swings every minute on the minute for 15 minutes.
Nice.
And, you know, the 10 swings will probably take you 25 seconds, and then you'll have, you know, 35 seconds of rest. And do that for 15 minutes and, like, check that box, man. That is, like, an awesome little workout. And you can EMOM any movement. You could, like, EMOM sit-ups, or you could EMOM overhead press, or, you know, push-ups, or anything. Like, the thing... the reason I love the EMOM is that it's just this simple, like, 12 to 15-minute piece. You can get in, like, a little bit of simple strength training in your garage.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Time.
Like, it's done. You use time.
And intensity.
And if
you're doing 10 sets of 5, that's reasonable volume, too. It's not going to trash you.
Because
what we don't need is more trashing.
Yeah.
We use one of the things we love for our cyclists, and something, a model we use all the time is, hey, we know we've got to get some short intervals in, right? And that's the actual thing. What we have seen, for example, in fitness, from Orange Theory to various boot camp to CrossFit, is that we actually have people now who are working at the 70-80%. And we see this in our high level runners.
Yeah.
Their high intensity days aren't high intensity, and the low days aren't easy intensity.
They're in happy endorphin world.
They're in the middle all the time. So they're always medium. And so when they need to go hard, they can't, and they don't. And when they need to go easy, to actually, because, like, we had a high level swimmer once who was like, you know, my coach is telling me not to swim, you know? And on my easy day, and I was like, did your coach say that? Because I know you like to have a lot of touch. Your coach has said, don't kill yourself in the pool. So if you're a swimmer and you have an easy day, go mess around in the pool. Go work on your stroke. Do some drills. You could do the same thing running in front of your house.
Yeah.
So for us, for example, we love to do these short intervals because they really keep us honest. And as we get older, we've got to keep that engine hot.
Right.
Because it's easy to downshift and be like, I'm going to go for 14 hours, but I won't be able to sprint.
Yep.
So we do either choose a short interval, a 30-second interval, or even a 60-second interval. And then our rest interval, which might be 30 seconds, a minute, or 90 seconds, we'll do a strength movement. Yeah. Pull-ups, push-ups, kettlebells.
What metric do you use? Like if you go do a 60-second on a bike or rower, like what?
Usually we minute on, minute off a lot. Yeah. Because that is and we call that a tick, because originally we used to do that, push 425 watts on the bike, big damper, big gear, and then step off and front squat heavy. And your legs would feel like ticks afterwards, like big swollen ticks. We call that model a tick, this minute on, minute off, because in the minute off, when I'm resting, I could be strict pressing, I could be doing burpees, I could be doing planks, and that still gives me the hit that I need, where I can keep this metabolic engine alive and work on my short intervals, but it also creates an opportunity for me to get some work in and limit my strength. So because I'm breathing so hard, I'm not going to be my maximum strength. And as an older person, I can warm up a little bit. So the first few rounds, I can be practicing. And then when I start to get hot and sweaty, I can really hit at the end.
I would like to make a plug, too, for this really favorite app called Sufferfest. We have no connection to them whatsoever.
Yeah,
we're just fans of it. And it's really designed to be used for, like, indoor cycling. But man, if you just want to get on, like, they have a couple 30-minute programs where it's just short interval, like, full blast, full bore interval training for 30 minutes. Like, you know, that's kind of saved our lives. Like, if Kelly and I are short on time, and we do fortunately have an indoor bike in our garage, so we can go do that. But if we're short on time, we can just run out there and, like, you know, sort of turn our brain off because Sufferfest is doing the programming. We can just crash ourselves on some intervals. Like, huge fans of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really a summer. We use it in the winter more.
If you're a if you're a runner, adding a concept to spin bike to your mix can really change your life, because we can unload your central nervous system, because it's not so pounding and it's not so central nervous system heavy, but it's high physiology.
Yeah.
So we can still keep that engine. And we really pull that out. One of our friends is Nick Gill, who's the strength conditioning coach for the All Blacks, and he uses the Watt bike this way for his runners. Like, he's like, they don't need more running. They need more conditioning.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to get off the geeky stuff for a second, the fun stuff, and because we only have about 5 minutes. And I know I saw a post about Amelia probably a few weeks ago when she wrote the eating disorder article that she wrote. She's coming in here in about 5 minutes. So I know that you had some really, really kind words, but I think just speaking to – you guys have daughters.
Yeah.
I have nieces. I mean, I have two boys. It's across the spectrum for sure. Just thoughts on that when you think about how hard it would be for somebody to write that, first of all, especially with the little platform to affect people.
I'll start by saying I have so much mad respect for her for doing that. Like, I already loved her, but, like, man, she just kind of went into the stratosphere of, like, respect for me, because just she's such an important figure and she has a platform. So to be able to put herself out there like that, I think for all girls and all women to say, hey, this is a real thing that I'm struggling with and, you know, it's not perfect. So I just, you know, huge props to Amelia for doing that. But I will say, as a mom of two girls, like, it is certainly, like, top of my, you know, like, I think as a mom of two girls, especially one going into high school, I'm like, okay, I hope, you know, my daughter doesn't develop an eating disorder and, like,
or
get addicted to drugs.
Eating.
Disordered eating or get addicted to drugs, right? Like, I really want to try to have my kids have a healthy relationship with food.
Yep.
And I can say, as a female athlete for most of my life, like, I've always felt like, you know, I think almost every woman hates their body, which is terrible.
Right.
No. So I hope to try to raise two daughters who don't hate their body and have a really healthy relationship with food. I'm not sure we're doing that or doing a good job of that. I mean, I hope we are, because we're super conscious and aware of it. But I mean, I do think sports, I think, are, you know, like, one of our remedies for that is having our kids in sports. Because, for example, both our daughters play water polo. And neither one of our daughters are also, like, small, waify, tiny, skinny people. And it's nice for them to be in a sport where, like, a big, strong girl is the ideal body type in that sport. I think that is, I know as a rower, I grew up as a rower, that was really helpful for me as an athlete to sort of be around women who were big and strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, and let me add that, one of the things that we I think we sidestep, or it's useful, is that we have these women models, role models. We have so many world champion aunties. My girls eat breakfast and they're 2 Olympic gold medals that we babysit behind them, right, in the morning, you know?
That's cool.
And so one of the things is that in our community, strength is valued and women are as strong as men. And also cooking and sitting down together and making food part of our family ritual, where we sit down and eat dinner together, that normalizes it. And then I'll also say that maybe from my sort of more callous side, you know, sport really is about the promise of self-actualization. And it is very easy for people to flirt with being under-calorie, which is really what this can be. And it's called relative energy deficiency syndrome. It happens to men and women because, honestly, there are body composition goals that help us perform better, right? And you can get sidetracked by a bad coach very early on in life. Or you can actually fall into relative energy deficiency because you don't plan your meals. And you did a brutal run, and then you went to work or school, and you just got behind. And it doesn't take many days to get behind before you have an issue. So on the one hand, it's part of this environmental load where if we're going to talk about the promise of sport, then we better prepare our young athletes to understand what it means to fuel and sleep and recover and be able to handle when their knees hurt. And so what we have done is we've said, look, here's sport. It really is just about output. But ultimately, sport is about being in loving communities and being supported and being coached and being vulnerable. And what I think what was extraordinary about Amelia's post is it's just that, honestly, the best expression of the promise of sport. That I confront my ego and become vulnerable and get better.
And I just have one last thing to add. I know we're out of time, but I just did I'm a certified nutrition coach, and I just did a nutrition talk for my daughter's high school water polo team. And my whole message was like, we have massively overcomplicated nutrition for all people, but kids especially. And, you know, I was like, if you guys leave here knowing that you should eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and maybe a snack before practice, and, like, leave with no other knowledge, like, I don't even care what that exactly is. I was like, it'd be great if just you had, like, protein, carbs, and fat. But, like, man, if you're just kind of eating on the regular as a kid athlete and trying to eat not processed foods, like, check the box, man. Like, it's gotten so complicated for adults, and everybody's confused. And then we're transferring that down to kids, and it doesn't need to be like that. You know, we just need to keep them fueled for whatever it is they're doing, whether they're an athlete or not.
And let me just add one piece, because I think this matters, is that one of our friends, Stacey Sims, who's the founder of Osmo Nutrition, and is really an expert in sports differences in men and women. She's like, hey, if you have young ladies, if you can avoid putting them on the pill, this is a really important metric. And look, some of them need to go on the pill. Birth control is their choice. One of the ways that we can tell if men are overtrained and under eating is they don't wake up with an erection right away. Like, if you are waking up without an erection as a man.
Wait a minute, let me think about this morning.
You.
You're like, wait.
And we call that boner, no boner, right? But women don't have the same piece. But what we do have is that when women stop getting their periods, that's a red flag for us.
Right.
And it's a tell about the physiology being stressed. And so if we pull that away, it's sometimes very difficult for us to assess until we have a stress fracture, until we're so down long. So once your athletes, young athletes, start to get their period and you're eating and they stop getting their period, and you're having this conversation. And if you coach women, you need to have this conversation with all your athletes.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, you are actually a shitty coach.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things we can do to get better, and, you know, it's complicated. And that's okay that it's complicated, but let's wade in and start having this conversation.
Awesome. I think that's a good. Just before we leave on recording, when you guys walked in, I was going to let you know this was a marital counseling session.
Fantastic.
It's not.
How are we doing?
You guys, but, okay, you're not a psychologist, but you work with so many, like, the amount of one-on-ones I've done in my career is tens and tens of thousands, right? So you notice cues and you notice body language. Your all's body language is awesome. Like, I can tell you guys still love each other, which is awesome. And the way you guys interact is really cool. It reminds me of my wife, so it's cool.
Thank you. I'd love to meet her
Your wife is a savage, obviously.
Yeah.
She's a beast.
I describe myself as the broken anchor in the relationship.
I mean, we've been entrepreneurs. I met my wife on a chairlift, on the highest chairlift in North America, snowboarding in Colorado. And within
Was that A Basin?
It was actually Breck Imperial Imperial Lift.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, she could have been a 10-year-old boy. Couldn't see her. It was freezing out, you know. And I invited her to the gym that I was coaching at to, you know, first date and make sure she had all her teeth and all that good stuff. And ever since then, we literally started businesses within weeks. I mean, we've always been each other's partner.
One of the things that people forget is that it's the myth of the lone auteur, savage, genius.
No thanks.
Well, it's a myth.
It is a myth.
It's always a diet.
Yeah, it doesn't exist. Yeah.
I know.
It's a diet. And I think what's so great is that Juliet is smarter than I am and a better.
Hang on.
Raise your hand if you're a 3-time world champion.
Well, that is true.
Yeah.
And one of us is not.
You're the credibility of the group.
It helps. It helps that I'm always getting my butt kicked. That really helps.
It's awesome. I could talk to you guys forever, but this is a good place to stop, for sure.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Awesome.